Welcome to Take Note. This is Ted Walker, my friend Adam Webb. This is where we look at life through the lens of our notebooks. Take Note is a podcast and a blog, takenote.space, about paying attention, keeping a notebook, exploring the ephemera of our daily lives and using our notebooks as a way to pay a little bit more attention. And then on the podcast, we talk about paying a little more attention. And if some of that includes, you know, digging a little deeper on the tools we like to use, sharing some of the blips and blops that find their way into our notebook, that I'd say it's like holding a mirror up to your own life and saying, hey, I really enjoyed this moment. Now I'm going to share it with my good friend, Adam. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing great, Ted, and I got some blips and blops for you.
Give me the blips, hold the blops.
Okay. All right. I was on a plane recently, and I like to, I get a lot of good material on a plane. So I'm maybe going to just go through a few of these real quickly.
Bring it.
Overheard at airport, two older golf type dudes. One says, she's got me going to Switzerland this summer. Don't know what I'm going to do there. Number two, teared up during the last 15 minutes of Creed when Rocky tells Adonis that they are a family. Number three, couple across the aisle won't stop talking while we're waiting to take off. Was tired of them almost instantly. No, I don't send postcards. I hope we're not roaming. A wrap in a restaurant costs $9, so that's not totally out of whack. I feel bad for whoever is sitting next to them on their next leg of the flight to Hawaii. And then the last one here. Saw a headline about a giant pig eating out of a trash can. Didn't click. No way the story could exceed the headline. Oh, one more. I got one more last one.
Keep them coming.
Guy in the last row of the plane, silver leather jacket, white hoodie, white jeans, purple hat. Was there orange too? Was this a dream? All on the same flight.
That's amazing. You just got to open your eyes a little bit.
Absolutely.
The riches that surround you. I mean, silver leather jacket alone, not only is it a fantastic band name, but
oh, yeah.
Think about what it takes to turn a leather jacket silver. That's amazing.
And this was like a real leather jacket. This was, I don't know what a fake leather jacket would be, but this look was the thickness of a leather jacket, but silver. Was there any way I could have walked up to the guy and told him how much I liked the whole outfit? Or do you just have to?
No, I think there's every way you could tell him that.
All right.
That reminds me, like, you know, taking a compliment, I think, is an interesting thing. And there was a point at which I realized that the best way to take a compliment is to say thank you. Like, for some reason, when we take a compliment, I think we feel the need to, like, justify our decision-making process. Like, hey, I really like that tie. And you're like, oh, thanks. I got it for $1.95 at the Goodwill up the street. Or, thanks. My mom got this for me for Christmas. She buys all my nicer shirts. You don't actually have to say that stuff. That's what I've realized.
It's really hard to just say thank you.
Isn't it? It is. But something tells me that silver leather jacket, purple hat, orange, ? Probably knows how to take a compliment.
Probably.
The couple just makes me think that those two they're just terrified of flying. And they were doing whatever it took just to fill up those terrified moments before takeoff.
Yeah, the rare refusal to send a postcard, like take a hard stance on postcards. What the? How do you care that much?
Yeah, like later that night, she's gonna be like, "So no postcards, huh?" And he's gonna be like, "Postcards? What are you talking about?" She's going to be like, "You remember when you said you weren't sending any postcards?" He's going to be like, "I have no memory of that conversation whatsoever. I was just terrified of that flight we were about to go on."
At the end of the flight, I'm just remembering now, I think this was not those people, but it could have been. The guy, at the end of the flight, there's a guy sitting, you know, he's got an aisle seat. And as soon as we're allowed to stand, he stands up right away. And his wife says to him, "You're not going anywhere. There's nowhere you can go. Sit down." And he slowly sits down. And I really wanted to get involved. I really wanted to say, like, because I was standing right there. Like, get up, buddy. Stretch your legs, you know? What the? It was just the saddest thing.
All right. So
what do you have?
Here's what I got. Work email to the entire division. Subject header reads, burning smell, M-dash, it's okay. Which I would also firmly fit that under whatever the body of this email is going to be. It's not going to do better than burning smell, M-dash, it's okay. It just takes you on an emotional roller coaster, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, doesn't a burning smell sometimes indicate that you're having a stroke?
So what if someone was having a stroke at the very moment they read that subject header? They thought, I'm all good. 10 minutes later.
Right. That's right. That's a dangerous email to send.
Okay. Next one I got. I got two quotes from my wife from the last week that got me. One is, my angry pacing just got me 10,000 steps. That's a Fitbit reference. And then the other quote from her was, and this is actually has a bit of a stationary tie-in. She says, you know, every time I get in the car, I find a pen. Pens are falling out of your pockets. This is what she tells me.
Yeah.
Just for my general awareness, in case you weren't aware, pens are falling out of your pockets.
Sounds like somebody needs like a little pen bag for Christmas.
I got the bags. I got the cases. I need a pen about my person at all times to feel comfortable.
So you always have a cap pen in your pocket, right? Never a click pen?
Actually, I prefer the click pen.
But don't you get, I do too, but don't you then accidentally click it in your pocket and get ink stains on your pants?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I've found that the inconvenience of a cap overrides all other concerns. I've just found that to be the case. Okay. It's like you find when I find myself not liking a certain kind of pen, 90% of the time it's because it's a pen with a cap.
I hear you. I got you. I get a lot of ink stains on my pockets. I need a pocket protector for my pants.
A pants, yeah. Garbage bag.
I don't know. Takenote.space/store. Pants pocket protectors.
Yeah, I have little blue dots along all of the right side pocket areas of my work pants.
But you work in academia. You can get away with that.
I'm not going to say that's not true. There's something to that. I definitely try and cultivate the sort of eccentric... Like wrinkled shirts and kind of accepting that as sort of part of my charm, which I think is perhaps a vaguely academia oriented viewpoint.
Many years ago, when we still lived in Boston, my wife Jennifer went to a nice jeans store on Newberry Street, and this was at the time when I guess they still do, right? You could buy jeans with rips in them. Pre-ripped jeans. And so I decided, while my wife was changing and trying to shop, I decided to harass the people that work there and ask if they sold, if they had any jeans in the store that had pen stains in them already. And they're like, no. And I was like, oh, that's what I like to wear. So, okay.
Gotta do it yourself, man.
That's right.
We got pens. We don't sell them. You can just have one.
I was trying to cultivate that it was a trend they were unaware of, but that me, you know, the fashion maven that I was letting them know.
What do you got for recommendations this week? Give me something from the culture. What caught your eye?
I got two things.
Maybe let's alternate. You okay. Give one, I'll give one. You give one, I'll give one. And thusly.
Right. I saw Living in Oblivion, a movie from about 20 years ago that I'd never seen, starring Steve Buscemi as a director, making an indie film. It's all set in one day, and it has this great Peter Dinklage scene at the very end, or in the last, I don't know, in the last act of it. Peter Dinklage shows up, didn't realize he was acting. I didn't realize he was acting 20 years ago. He shows up, and I, you know, even though it's a 20-year-old movie, I don't really want to spoil it, but he does not disappoint. He's very frustrated. He's very annoyed with the world around him. He is an actor who is a short person who I think they call a dwarf in the movie, and he does not like the way he's being treated, and it's pretty fantastic. There's also some good, like, it feels very mid-90s. Like, there's a reference to people only being willing to be in the movie within a movie because maybe they'll get a shot at a Tarantino film, that sort of thing.
Say the name of it again.
I believe it's Living in Oblivion.
I have absolutely no awareness of this film whatsoever.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Via which media delivery service did you watch this film?
It is called Living in Oblivion. It's 1995. I watched this from Mubi, M-U-B-I, which is a streaming thing with foreign films, art films, and indie films, and classic films. They have 30 movies at any time. One movie is added every day, and one movie is removed every day.
And you do have children? Is that correct?
I mean, I go months without watching a single one of these, and then the guilt builds up, and then I, you know, I took a 4-hour plane ride, and I watched one of them. And then I watched the second half of Creed when I cried in the air. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, the you know, a simple scan through the Netflix archives, it becomes immediately apparent that there's just whole oceans of movies that are not covered by this kind of silly streaming movie service. It's almost like a switch that they've pulled to go from a DVD service where you could get every movie you ever wanted to a streaming service where you can get 5% of the movies from the last 5 years.
Absolutely. It's like a weird decision engine instead of a vast library of everything.
Which is exactly the opposite of how they started.
Right, and there's something about, I think a movie like Living in Oblivion, which is on Mubi, is something, M-U-B-I, is something exactly, that's the sort of thing you want to find. What do I see? That's Stephen King, Misery. Misery was the last movie I saw like this where I just wanted like a, you know, a 20-year-old really good movie that wasn't a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I had to really search for something. Like, that's always what I want to see, and it's really hard to find.
Well, what I've found, like, I have cable, and I of course get all these, I get these movie channels that I don't really know, I don't feel like ever asked for them, but they're just on there. And, but when you actually, when you scan through those things, they are actually showing a lot of the movies that Netflix doesn't have, like True Romance, that kind of thing, where it's that same category. You're like, oh, True Romance, I never watched that back in the day. Let me watch that now. So it still exists. It's just on traditional cable, which doesn't get a lot of credit for actually showing a lot of the stuff that, you know, that, like, just the whole the span of human filmmaking, which is just wildly underrepresented. I mean, it's almost at this point, Netflix and Amazon, they're TV stations that happen to show a few other things, but mostly it's just their own stuff. That's like the point that we've gotten to. And, you know, Parks and Rec or whatever.
Right.
Which is fine. It's fine.
Yeah. They should have a category that's like a video store. Like the thing that you'd find on the wall at the video store.
That would be amazing. Out of time, out of space, nothing. It doesn't have to do with how new it is or whatever.
What about you? Do you have anything to recommend?
I just very randomly recommend the Mighty Thor comic books, which is, you know, I'm no comic whiz or whatever. I had my little spell of comic books in the 90s, kind of lost interest in it. But I've recently gone back. It was actually after rereading The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay fairly recently by Michael Chabon, where they go, part of the setting is the golden age of comic books. And so I got interested in, you know, checking out comic books. And I really liked the Thor movies. And I thought, hey, you know, I need a window in. I'll make Thor my window into kind of what the comics that they're publishing these days. And I've just found it to be very rewarding. And I realize, you know, like I kind of realized that part of comic books, and I just never thought of this, is that the challenge of a comic book is to think of the craziest, most epic, wildest plot that you can and just do that plot. And you're not worried about like what you'll do the next month. Right. Like, oh, how will I ever top this? They just never worry about how they will ever top it. If they need to like have entire civilizations do battle, they do that. And then the next week, like, oh, here's another civilization that will do battle with the first two civilizations. And there's something really satisfying about that awareness. And I think Thor is a really good channel for that, because it's just only battles of ridiculous civilizations. There's just very little melodrama. I don't know if that's the right word, but
I never read Thor.
So I'll finish the thought. So the sort of culminating experience is that the artwork ends up being a really important part of the fun. So there's actually really great artwork around these insane stories. So the Mighty Thor, that's my recommendation.
Is Jack Kirby the artist on some of those?
No, these are actually like I picked up at like the recent ones. So the series has been going on forever, but I just picked up like there's this one that started in 2015 or something. It's actually still called The Mighty Thor, but it's a quote contemporary unquote. But I can't remember who did the original stuff.
I was asking because I saw this thing today. There's an artist I like, current contemporary artist named Tom Scioli, a comic book artist, who's very Jack Kirby-esque. And I like reading his stuff just for the art, for the crazy art and the strange, I don't know, the structures and the scale of it all. And I saw today that he is doing he's doing the biography of Jack Kirby in his Kirby-esque style, in a Kirby-esque comic book, which I thought was really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, back when I was younger, I didn't, there was something, I couldn't make that leap into, you know, you really just have to give this your full release and let the grandiosity be a part of it. And I just didn't get that back in the day. But I think that was the appeal of it. You know, what I did go back and read was Fantastic Four, some of the first like seven or eight editions. And they embraced that very quickly. The idea that this is about, you know, broad sweeping gestures and crazy ideas and cool art. And what little I know of Jack Kirby is that he loved those big crazy ideas, and that was what he was always bringing to the table.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And there's a real release in that, which even allows you to go back and enjoy the movies, which are coming out like crazy these days. It enables you to kind of go back and watch those in a new way too, and really just enjoy the pomposity of it.
I haven't seen any of the Thor movies, but I know they're supposed to be they happen to be a couple of the really good ones, those Marvel movies.
And I haven't seen the latest one, which I think everybody really liked, but like the first Thor that came out was just charming and silly and some super cool visual stuff. And in the comics, and they kind of play that out similar way. A lot of interesting visual stuff to work with. All right, that's my recommendation on that one.
I got one more too.
What do you got?
Okay. So I did take a plane trip recently. I did take a flight recently. So I flew to California the other day. And I only packed 4 books for my 3-day trip. So of course, at the airport, I bought a magazine as well. Do you know Monocle magazine?
I'm generally aware of it.
Is it called Monocle? I don't even think I've realized that the stupid magazine that I occasionally buy is called Monocle, but it is. I can't tell if I like this. I mean, it's obviously like just very douchey. It's for like super rich hipsters, I think. It is called Monocle. Shocking. Anyways, but I like it because I'm interested like in print, and I'm really interested in magazines. Anyways, they print things on, they do interesting things. They're printing on a bunch of different types of paper stock. This one had an insert in the magazine that was actually loose. I don't even know how they did it, but it was an advertising insert that was like a 48-page book of photos of Lufthansa's just materials from their archive, which is interesting. But the thing that I saw in the magazine that I think made it all worthwhile was a 1-page story about a high-end pigeon racing magazine from Japan, a 200-page quarterly called Friends of Loved Pigeons. And I'm totally cool with this Monocle magazine now. Like, I feel like it totally, you know, they did a story about that pigeon racing magazine. I'm down with whatever they want to do.
I mean, isn't I feel like a magazine story about another magazine is probably peak niche high-end magazine.
Well, yes. This is their media issue in their defense. But, I mean, they little stories about the best European design newspapers or the top 5 designed newspapers in Europe, and I was eating it up.
I mean, it's hard to question the appeal. my final recommendation is, well, it's kind of a combination. It's Bleachers, the Jack Abramoff. I always get his last name wrong.
Yeah.
Band.
Okay.
Lena Dunham's now ex-boyfriend. He was in the band Fun, and then and he's like a mega producer. He produced like Taylor Swift's, one of her albums and all this stuff. But he's just a pop maestro. I love his music. But so the double recommendation is that I listened to him on a recent episode of Sound Exploder. Do you ever listen to this podcast?
Yeah, that show is great.
I mean, it's so good. You can kind of go into that. You can go into it never having heard of the song in question, in which a guest on every episode breaks down the production of a song that they put on, you know, it's musicians, they put on their album. And they talk about the building the samples and the instruments and the approach and where the song started and where it's going. And I mean, the truly amazing part is that the host, Ricochet Sherway, I think is his name. He says it very quickly.
Ricochet Sherway.
One day I'll actually look at how that's spelled.
But Ricochet? Now I'm screwing it. Ricochet Sherway. That's it. No, I got it.
Sounds good. But they end up breaking apart the song, like exploding the song, and playing the kind of, you know, single tracks that led to the buildup of the whole. So you end up with this deeper understanding of what it takes to build a song, and a deeper understanding of, you know, the mentality of the person who wrote the song, and really awesome stuff. But the Bleachers episode was not earth-shattering, but it was just really good, really good stuff.
I will check that out. I have a related Ricochet Sherway recommendation or story. He does another podcast with Joshua Molina, who was an actor on The West Wing, where they talk about every episode of The West Wing. And in one of those episodes, Joshua Molina talks about the value and the talent of stand-ins and extras, And while I was in California, I spent a little bit of time with my friends Gabriella and Tim. And Tim is a stand-in, and we see a picture of someone that I thought was Joshua Malina. And Tim says, "I am the stand-in for Joshua Malina on Scandal."
Whoa.
Yes, and I had this moment where I was like, "Do you know he has this podcast too?" And he said, "No, I don't." And I said, "I think I have listened to this man talk about the talent of stand-ins, and he was probably referring, at least in part, to you."
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a true Hollywood moment right there.
Yeah, that I know the stand-in for Joshua Malina. Close that's personal that's, friends.
That's amazing.
I guess.
Tools of the trade. What do you think? This is where we spend a little bit talking about what we're using to capture these moments that we've just dug into a little bit. My first entry into this tools section, and let me clarify, we totally poached the name of that section from the Erasable podcast because it's so appealing. I think they literally call it Tools of the Trade. So shout out to the Erasable podcast. What I found myself enjoying lately that I did not anticipate are colorful gel pens, like pens in unusual colors, but uh-huh. using them to write for work, for notes, for normal stuff. Really into it. Caught me off guard. Didn't expect it.
I like a gray pen or occasional green pen. If we're going to shout out other things like our thing, the host of the Pen Addict podcast, Brad
Dowdy,
he did a thing where he paired a blog post where he paired a pen for each of the Field Notes colors, and that got me on to green pens for a while.
Yeah, don't feel like I've seen that post.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Well, it's funny. Green is one of the colors that actually that got me into. Yeah, there's some amount of green pen.
Absolutely.
But what happened with me is that I think I referenced in a previous episode searching for a notebook for my child. And when I got that notebook for her, I also grabbed a packet of Pentel Energel colorful pens because I thought they would appeal to her. And of course, I ended up stealing one of those pens. And it was the green one. And I found it very appealing. It's a nice, that one in particular is a nice, deep, kind of evergreen green. So it lends itself well to writing and stuff. But I was at the art supply store. I bought a Pilot G2 in a dark maroon color. Got myself an orange G2. It's, you know, once you go down that path,
you got to try everything.
You got to try. You got to see what's the Pilot green look like versus the Pentel green. Only one way to find out about that.
Pen test.
What do you got?
I'm using a Kuretake brush pen. And I think either I like it more than the Tombow brush pen I was using, or the Tombow brush pen ran out of ink, and it just seems like this one's better. I honestly cannot tell. But the other tool that I was going to talk about, I bought my kids $17 worth of stickers on a strange sticker binge. I did not expect them to be $17 worth of stickers. And my three-year-old Wiley has been peeling them off and putting them on my face and on my hands and on my clothes and on the floor. And so I have been picking them up and putting them in the notebook because otherwise I'm just throwing them out. And so I've got a page and a half filled with Minion stickers, Rocket Ship stickers, camper van stickers, and doggy portrait stickers right now.
There's... You could never just get those stickers for yourself, but once the child has imbued his innocent, I don't know, je ne sais quoi.
Spit. Right? Spit.
And then they take on a new appeal. That reminds me, this happened today, actually. I was at work. Grabbed one of my Rhodia notebooks that I've just got sitting around. I have this array of notebooks that I can never quite settle on one for the work purpose, but I pick it up, open it up, try to find an empty page, and I came upon a drawing that my 5-year-old daughter had done at some point. And I just had no memory of it, don't know when she did it. I must have brought it home and she scribbled, you know, she did a drawing and put it back, whatever. It was so nice. I love stumbling upon surprise doodles from children. It said something, it was like a big drawing of a piece of chalk, and it said maize chalk on the side of the piece of chalk. And then there was a picture of someone with spectacles looking rather goofy.
Really?
Presuming that was a portrait of me, not exactly sure. Wouldn't be out of the question. But there's something about those, finding those little things that just is so appealing to me.
I agree. I think that drawing a chalk would be pretty difficult.
It was a crayon-esque likeness.
Nice. Yeah, she's got real talent. I meant that. I know that it sounded like I didn't mean it.
Well, how would you know? You haven't seen it. Could you not compliment my child without proper evidence? I'll send you several hundred samples, and then you can provide me with your assessment.
Sounds great. I had a situation while I was in California, actually. So I was there for some work meetings, and we needed to have a teleconference. And the hotels, any hotel really, if you want to rent a teleconference speaker, they're going to charge about $425 for a day. So I had this idea, this brilliant idea, that I was going to buy an Apple HomePod. I had read an article about how it has 6 microphones in it. So I was like, this will be good. And I called up Apple. And I had the most pleasant retail experience I've ever had. I told the woman on the phone what I was going to use it for. I asked if she thought that it would work or if it would look like I just wanted to buy an expensive Apple thing in front of my client. And she assured me that it was going to work. She was very kind. And so I bought it so that it would arrive at the Apple store in California so I could go pick it up. I pick it up. Super nice guy tells me it's going to take me 2 minutes to set it up. I get back to the hotel. Nothing's working. It requires a personal Wi-Fi connection, it says. And I don't have a personal Wi-Fi connection at the hotel. I've got a Wi-Fi connection where I need to put in a username and a password in addition to selecting a thing. So it's not working. My grand plan is beginning to fail. And I remember a coffee shop across the street that I go to every year. A quiet little coffee shop. And I remember using the Wi-Fi and it being a simple sort of Wi-Fi. Just, here's the password for the Wi-Fi.
Like a personal Wi-Fi.
Like a personal or a personal seeming Wi-Fi. And so I get this bad idea. And I ask my coworker, and my coworker humors me and tells me it's a good idea. And so I drive across the street to Milk and Honey, I think maybe it's called. And the coffee shop is not empty like it usually is. It is pretty much filled with hipsters. And I am wearing a sport coat, and I say, I'm going to buy a coffee. I'd like an Americano, and also I have this HomePod, and I can't set it up on the Wi-Fi at my hotel. I'm going to give you a nice big tip here. Is there any chance I could try to set it up here with your Wi-Fi? And I don't know how I didn't see this coming, but the lady looks at me like I'm crazy. And she says, let me ask my manager.
Oh, boy.
And she disappears for a minute. And in that minute, the line that forms at the counter is just astonishing. I have completely disrupted this business. And the woman comes back. And she says, my manager says it's fine as long as it doesn't make any noise. And I think to myself, this is a giant speaker. I have no idea if it's going to make any noise. But if it does, it's going to be very loud. And I say, thank you. And I mean, throughout this whole thing, I'm apologizing. I mean, I apologize. It's almost the first thing out of my mouth. And I find this little ledge next to an employee on her break who then asks me, because she's overheard part of this, what in the hell is happening? And she becomes very amused. She understands, actually. And on my third time explaining, it sort of makes sense. And And I
plug I don't understand it at all. Okay. But that's part of why I'm enjoying it.
And I plug this thing in and I connect my phone to the personal Wi-Fi and I get the exact same damn error message that I was getting at the hotel. And I leave and I Google it and it's a known issue and it's really frustrating for half the people trying to set up this brand new thing. And I pay $425 for a teleconference line to be rented at the hotel.
And you got a really nice doorstop.
Yeah, I'm going to return this thing. Yep.
It's quite a saga.
Yep.
You know what overwhelms me every now and again is thinking of how many things people are trying to do every single day. You'll get dizzy trying to think of just how many things are going on. And there's so many things going on a given day in America, just America.
And I find that it's like good ideas that always add to that list. I've got an idea. I'll save a little money.
Hey, you know what would be a great idea? If we do this thing, like when people call another company to like get help with a thing, like a piece of software. It blows my mind. Like, okay, I'm using some piece of software. I have a problem. And I call somebody to ask them about it.
Uh-huh.
There's like somebody at the company there answering questions about this thing.
Answering everybody's question all day.
All day. But they're doing that thing. There's got to be at least 50 of these companies across the country doing this every day. It's mind-blowing. Sometimes I feel like the internet is trying to get me to think about every one of those 50 companies constantly and hold it all in my brain at the same time while attempting to lead a normal human life simultaneously.
It's trying to get you to think of all these companies that answer questions?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you could probably name a company, and they're probably answering questions about the things that they do and helping people with their company. I don't have time to think about that.
I don't either. It's become very stressful.
I got my own life to live.
You don't call people with questions?
Not if I can help it.
I bet you don't go into coffee shops and ask people to use their Wi-Fi to set up giant speakers.
Let's do this again, Adam.
Sounds good, Ted.
This has been Take Note. Check us out on takenote.space. That's our website. When you get on that site, check out the notebook prompts. Sign up. Adam will send you a newsletter of prompts if you are looking to write stuff and you want some launching points for what to write. We got a nascent blog over there. So takenote.space. Check it out. Adam's a great stationary photographer. We have more of that up there. We should put your Instagram. All these ideas. It's all percolating. We're excited.
I'm going to get those pants pocket protectors up in the store.
Prototype.
Yep.
$425 will get you the prototype.
We're going to be millionaires.
Bye, Adam.